I'm Josh Medina.
I'm Mohammed Mohammed. Name so nice you had to repeat it twice.
And this is Radioactive. Hey Mohammed, I haven't seen you since Ramadan ended. Feel good to have lunch again?
Yeah, man. Ramadan was very nice. You know, I took part of the prayers, fasted, enjoyed with family, had fun with friends. You know, it was just a really blessing of a month.
Sounds awesome. You know, I recently took part in my own religion's most celebrated cultural event.
Oh, really?
It's called Friday. You may have heard of it. We Pastafarians celebrate it about 52 times a year with our age-old tradition of hanging out.
Pastafarianism. I never heard of that. Can you tell me about it?
Why, yes, my dear friend. The ancient tradition of enlightened philosophers that pay tribute to the flying spaghetti monster. He boiled for your sins, you see.
All right, then. You know that religion is the topic of our next podcast.
Right you are.
Yeah, religion and change from the youth.
Religion and change, huh? Sounds controversial. Fun, I mean.
We'll be talking about how people change religion and how religion changes people.
You know, when I think of religion and change, I usually think of, upheaval, politics, and violence.
Really?
I mean, just look at the situation with Israel and Palestine. Religion and change are like the secret ingredients for conflict, if you ask me.
Come on, man, not always. Our first story today is actually about religion promoting and talking about peace.
No, really? That's a relief.
35 preteens from the U.S., Israel, and Palestine were all hanging out in the basement of a Seattle synagogue, trying to end the conflict between the two nations.
Kendra Hanna has more.
I'm at Temple of the Hersh Sinai in Capitol Hill, and I'm talking with Laura and Omar, two 12-year-olds, about books by John Green, the young adult novelist.
Have you guys read John Green books?
Fault in Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars, Looking for Alaska, and I'm reading An Abundance of Catherines.
Omar had a copy of Paper Towns by John Green, and the book had been passed from kid to kid.
This was like originally my book, then I gave it to Irene to read it, and then Irene gave it to Laura to read it.
It's really good. I started it yesterday.
Laura's from Bellevue, and she's Jewish. Omar's from Jerusalem, and he's Muslim. The reason Laura and Omar are talking right now is Kids for Peace. It's a program that tries to make change in the Israel and Palestine region with camps and programs in Jerusalem and across the U.S. And they have this summer camp in Seattle. There are 24 kids from Jerusalem, 8 Muslim, 8 Christian, and 8 Jewish, and 11 from Seattle. The camp is wrapping up, touring local mosques and churches, attending services, and also doing normal camp stuff. And Maya from Seattle, Carlina from Jerusalem, and Eve from Bellevue all have glowing reviews.
And my experience at this camp has been really good and really fun. It's an amazing place.
I like Kids for Peace so much. I like the friends here.
It was a lot just being kids and having fun and making new friends. It's the bonds that we created at camp that are going to be the ones that help us make peace.
In one word, amazing.
This is Omar again. He's been to other summer camps before, not by Kids for Peace. He went to one in Jerusalem with his siblings where they were the only Palestinians, and he says that felt scary. He felt that political issues were only being represented from the Israeli side.
There they used to talk a lot about Hamas and the rockets, and less about bombs dropping and children dying. But here I feel equality here. I feel people talking from two different opinions. And I really like that. I have people that are supporting my opinion, and at the same time, I hear people talking from the other side.
He says they all have the same ultimate goal.
It's just one word. You want peace.
Omar thinks things are changing. Kids for Peace is growing.
And it just keeps spreading, and you know, people are getting tired from the conflict and the war, and they want to live in peace. I think Kids for Peace will change the world.
For the last couple of days, the campers went to churches and mosques, and every time they sang the song about peace. And now they sing it at Temple to Hersh Sinai during the Shabbat service in Hebrew, Arabic, and English. For Radioactive, I'm Kendra Hanna.
It's really inspiring and engaging, really, how much of an effect youth can have on a community.
I usually think of religious influence from the top down, not from the bottom up.
That reminds me. We've talked about how the youth have changed the religious community. Now we could talk about how religion changes youth.
The intersection of community and faith can have a large impact on your life, whether you step into a new community or step out of an old one.
Our next story features youth who've traveled both paths to Islamic faith, a young woman who found relief, support, and comfort through faith in a loving community, and a young man who forges his own path to faith, regardless of what society thinks.
In Islam, when a person becomes Muslim, it's called reverting, because Muslims believe everyone is born in a pure state of believing in the oneness of Allah, God. Here in the States, about a quarter of Muslims are reverts, and an overwhelmingly large amount of those reverts are American-born, according to the Pew Research Center. First, I'd like to introduce Paul Kiefer. He is 16 years old, has blue eyes and dirty blonde hair, and he was baptized a Presbyterian. However, there are some things about his old religion that he didn't really understand.
And then because I was Christian before, I definitely believed in a God, but I really doubted this, the Jesus being the Son of God thing. That was something I couldn't get on board with, right? Because, you know, what's God? God isn't a person. Why would God's kid be a person? That doesn't make any sense.
When he started high school at University Prep, a private school in North Seattle, he met a classmate who was Muslim. Paul started asking him questions. His friend recommended him to read the Quran. So Paul took the copy of the Quran from the school library.
And kept it for like 3 months, and I wasn't supposed to do that. I read over it a lot. I read it every night for quite a while.
Ever since he was 12, Paul has been passionate about social justice and equality. He didn't like feeling like he could have it easier just because of his race. He's white. He was trying to see if the Quran matched with his moral beliefs.
And what I found is that there's a much stronger focus on social justice, like the thing that I care about most. So it states that people of all races are equal, and it states that women and men are equal, and it gives outlines for all kinds of laws and behaviors that make sure that equality is made a priority.
Muslims believe that Allah, God, doesn't judge a person by his or her wealth, class, or race, but by their actions. Those themes of justice and equality appeal to him. But Paul also desired to be a part of a community.
I was feeling kind of lonely and isolated. I didn't have that many friends in my neighborhood and in my school, and I wanted a strong community that I could connect to pretty easily.
Paul says becoming Muslim was a logical thing for him to do. The next step was taking the Shahada. The Shahada is a declaration of faith that a person makes when becoming Muslim. They can take it anywhere.
I did my Shahada in the basement downstairs, and I was super excited, and I was like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be a Muslim. And then I'm like, wait, I'm in my basement. And he was like, this is what we got. You know, then we went and did prayers, and I was like, yeah, I'm super Muslim.
Paul chose the name Farouk, the distinction between truth and falsehood, but it's still okay to call him Paul. New Muslims have the option to change their names, but our next team decided not to. At 3 in the morning, during the last 10 nights of Ramadan, Monet Trevino came to do extra night prayers.
The prayers are beautiful. It's really nice to be surrounded by women that actually are like really empowering to each other.
When I found Monet, she was putting on a bomb hot pink hijab. For a newbie, she was doing a good job, even though she kept messing with it and checking her reflection. Monet just became Muslim 3 days earlier, and like Paul, she was raised Christian. Around sophomore year of high school, she began to doubt her faith.
It wasn't like, you know, I was praying every single day. It wasn't like I was thanking God every day. I wasn't blessing my food. I wasn't doing these things that, you know, Christians would do. And, it got to a point where I was just like, you know, this isn't who I am. This isn't what I need to be.
Monet was going through a lot with her family during her junior year. Her relationship with her mom was on the rocks. Monet moved out. Being 17 and leaving your mom and family is tough. Plus, she got in trouble with the law. She was staying with her grandma, and even though her and her grandma were close, Monet was still going through a rough patch and had some dark thoughts.
It wasn't until I got into a really bad, actually, argument with my grandmother, and it just got to the point where I was literally just done with everything. Like, it was horrible, and I had to sit back and really reflect, like, if I take my life, what am I going to gain for that?
Monet was going through a lot of depression. She felt alone, and she was tired of being miserable.
I wasn't in a good place in my life at all whatsoever. And, you know, when you're in those dark places, you reach for the light. You try to, like, find, you know, the good in every bad situation.
That light, the first thing she thought about was her best friend. That friend and her family opened their home for Monet and welcomed her into their lives. That friend happens to be Muslim. During her time with them, Monet became interested in their religion. So interested that she did a documentary on them.
It was supposed to be just for my knowledge. It wasn't supposed to be something that, you know, changed me. Ended up being something that I fell in love with.
Islam offered Monet an anchor of stability that she needed.
You know, I've experienced other religions, other cultures, other lifestyles, and there's a lot of slack, you know? There isn't a lot of high expectations. It's like, oh, you can do the minimum and you'll still be a Christian. It's like, how I see it is you can't just do the minimum and be a Muslim. You have to want to go above and beyond, you know? You guys don't just stop at one thing. It's continuous. And you guys help each other. And your guys' community is strong because your guys' religion is strong.
3 days after her reversion, Monet already saw a big change.
My heart has gotten a lot more softer. And I'm not as angry. Like, I have my moments, but I'm not, like, the... I don't know how to explain it. The rowdy Monet that I was before.
Monet's friends have noticed that too, and her grandmother's really supportive.
Anything that will push me in the right direction, that will help guide me into the right direction, she's all for. So she's, you know, she's like, thank God, I'm just so happy for you.
Farouk, formerly known as Paul, has had a different experience. When he did tell his family, they weren't as happy as Monet's grandma. His dad, Kirk Kiefer, grew up in a religious family, but rejects organized religion. He says it was hard to see his son accept
it. We had to grow on it. Fasting during Ramadan is really hard. I'm not a huge fan of fasting as an idea, and watching him go through it is pretty hard. And I try not to be negative about it, but I don't understand it.
Ramadan is a time when Muslim families and the community come together at the mosque, the masjid. And Farouk wasn't allowed to go to the mosque alone.
They wouldn't let me go to the masjid. That was the blow to me. I wasn't allowed to go to the masjid.
His parents fear that he would be indoctrinated by extremists. In the year that Farouk's been Muslim, he's felt somewhat different from the Muslim community as well. A lot of Muslims in the greater Seattle area are Somali, Southeast Asian, or Pakistani.
I've started to feel a little disconnected because I don't look like everyone else and no one ever thinks I'm a Muslim.
Despite all of these struggles, he's still learning.
So, what are you doing?
I'm doing wudu, which is the cleaning ritual that you do before prayers. Every time you pray, you wash your face.
He's optimistic about the future.
I am still the unique person that I've always been, but I'm a unique person that has a community now, and I'm really proud to be a part of that community, and it's going to do good things for me.
For Monet, it's just the beginning. She does expect some obstacles along the way, but overall, she's happy.
I really do think that the best thing that's ever happened to me so far within these last couple of months that have really been hell for me was the day that I really chose to convert. So, and I'm very satisfied where I am. I'm very at peace with myself.
Both Paul and Monet are eager to learn the Arabic language, the language of the Quran. They hope to become better Muslims and better people. For Radioactive, I'm Ardo Hersey.
Religion can change your life, and that change can give back to the community.
Change can be difficult, but faith and dedication will see you through. I know from firsthand experience.
Oh man, not this again.
Grant the flying spaghetti monster thy sauce, and in the sauce, noodles, and in the noodles, meatballs.
Just stop, knock it off.
And in the meatballs, knowledge. And from knowledge, knowledge of what is tasty.
That's enough, dude, seriously.
And from knowledge of what is tasty, the love of spaghetti. And from spaghetti, the love and understanding of the flying spaghetti monster.
Alright, folks, that's a wrap. I'd like to thank...
Be not troubled, fellow host. As its tastiness, the spaghetti monster welcomes you with open noodly appendages. And... Hello?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Oh, hey, Angela. What's up? Haven't seen you around the station lately.
Hey. You know, I've been away at college and I missed the station, but I just want to let you all know, for those of you who don't know, I am one of the advanced producers and I would like to interrupt your sermon with an anecdote.
All right, then.
Go for it.
Okay, so because I'm a freshman and I'm still trying to find my way out on campus, I was looking for a place to worship because I'm Catholic. So I was finally relieved when I found a church to go to. Anyway, I go into Mass a couple minutes before it starts, and I was looking for a place to sit. I looked to my right, and I looked to my left, and then I saw these two girls staring at me, like really mean stares, and I have no idea why or for how long, but they would not stop. So then I thought to myself, I feel kind of uncomfortable and should probably tell them to not cross the line.
Cross the line.
Because it's a symbol of Jesus' crucifixion. Yeah, I should probably make friends with them to alter their perception of me.
Well, be sure to stop by the Church of Spaghetti while you're there. I mean, it's a very important place, especially if you're looking to worship something that actually exists.
It actually does.
Yeah, but anyway, I got to go hit the books to be that college student.
Oh, of course.
Have fun with your podcast, y'all. All
right, thank you.
You too.
Bye.
All right, bye.
If you enjoyed our podcast, visit kuow.org/radioactive for more.
Follow us on Twitter at @KUW Radioactive and like us on Facebook if you have faith in our content.
Thanks for listening.
And may the flying spaghetti monster bless you with his noodly appendages.
Thanks to Kendra Hanna and Ardo Hersey for contributing their stories this month.
Special thanks to Leela Katayev and Jenny Asarno for general helpfulness and Angela Nguyen for her punny sense of humor.
I'm your host, Mohammed Mohammed.
And I'm Josh Medina, honorable spokesman of the Church of Pastafarianism.